banish even the memory of the old one, for to a god grown old time is as ruthless as to a beggarman grown old. But the Ulster gentleman refused Finian admittance. He barricaded his house, he shuttered his windows, and in a gloom of indignation and protest, he continued the practices of 10,000 years, and would not hearken to Finian calling at the window or to time knocking at his door. But of those adversaries, it was the first he redoubted. Finian loomed on him as a portent and a terror, but he had no fear of time. Indeed, he was the foster brother of time, and so disdainful of the bitter god that he did not even disdain him. He leapt over the scythe, he dodged under it, and the sole occasions on which time laughs is when he chances on Tuan, the son of Cairil, the son of Murdac Redneck. 2. Now Finian could not abide that any person should resist both the gospel and himself, and he proceeded to force the stronghold by peaceful but powerful methods. He fasted on the gentleman, and he did so to such purpose that he was admitted to the house, for to an hospitable heart the idea that a stranger may expire on your doorstep from sheer famine cannot be tolerated. The gentleman, however, did not give in without a struggle. He thought that when Finian had grown sufficiently hungry, he would lift the siege and take himself off to some place where he might get food. But he did not know Finian. The great abbot sat down on a spot just beyond the door, and composed himself to all that might follow from his action. He bent his gaze on the ground between his feet, and entered into a meditation from which he would only be released by admission or death. The first day passed quietly. Often the gentleman would send a servitor to spy if that deserter of the gods was still before his door, and each time the servant replied that he was still there. "He will be gone in the morning," said the hopeful master. On the morrow the state of siege continued, and through that day the servants were sent many times to observe through spy holes. "Go," he would say, "and find out if the worshipper of new gods has taken himself away." But the servants returned each time with the same information. "The new druid is still there," they said. All through that day, no one could leave the stronghold. And the enforced seclusion wrought on the minds of the servants, while the cessation of all work banded them together in small groups that whispered and discussed and disputed. Then these groups would disperse to peep through the spyhole at the patient, immobile figure seated before the door, wrapped in a meditation that was timeless and unconcerned. They took fright at the spectacle, and once or twice a woman screamed hysterically, and was bundled away with a companion's hand clapped on her mouth, so that the ear of their master should not be affronted. "He has his own troubles," they said. "It is a combat of the gods that is taking place." So much for the women, but the men also were uneasy. They prowled up and down, tramping from the spy hole to the kitchen, and from the kitchen to the turreted roof. And from the roof, they would look down on the motionless figure below, and speculate on many things, including the staunchness of man, the qualities of their master, and even the possibility that the new gods might be as powerful as the old. From these peepings and discussions, they would return languid and discouraged. "If," said one irritable guard, "if we buzzed a spear at the persistent stranger, or if one slung at him with a jagged pebble." "What," his master demanded wrathfully, "is a spear to be thrown at an unarmed stranger? And from this house?" And he soundly cuffed that indelicate servant. "Be at peace, all of you," he said, "for hunger has a whip and he will drive the stranger away in the night." The household retired to wretched beds, but for the master of the house there was no sleep. He marched his halls all night, going often to the spy hole to see if that shadow was still sitting in the shade, and pacing thence tormented, preoccupied, refusing even the nose of his favorite dog as it pressed lovingly into his closed palm. On the morrow, he gave in. The great door was swung wide, and two of his servants carried Finian into the house, for the saint could no longer walk or stand upright by reason of the hunger and exposure to which he had submitted. But his frame was tough as the unconquerable spirit that dwelt within it, and in no long time he was ready for whatever might come of dispute or anathema.